You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Tuesday, 11th of August. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Gary Boyson from Rand Swiss. We'll talk markets after we got a day off. Varushka Singh from RMB on our volatile Rand. Victoria Riveras from Morningstar on diversity in the fund management industry. This show is proudly sponsored by FMI, a division of Bidvest Life Limited. Make your impact, protect your income first. The views and opinions expressed in this show do not reflect the views and opinions of FMI. Some morning headlines from MoneyWeb. Grindrod forced to bail out 1.6 billion BEE failure. And from CNBC, it's never been easier to make money on small and mid-caps, according to JP Morgan strategists. Morning markets, we of course missed Monday, but yesterday, overnight, we saw S&P up 0.3%, NASDAQ off 0.4%. Asia, very green. Sydney, up 1%. Tokyo up 1.7%. Commodities mostly green. Gold, $2,017. This time, Friday morning, was $2,065. Rand, $1,765. And top 40, calling for a green open, about 0.5% up.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Gary Boyson. He, of course, portfolio manager at Rand Swiss. Gary, morning. Appreciate your time. We've seen a fair bit of data coming out, sort of reporting season in the US, the S&P 500 stocks, around, 89% of shares so far reporting for that second quarter 2020. Numbers haven't been bad, although obviously we're looking at numbers relative to estimates, and estimates went crashing down as COVID came. But I mean, essentially, they're coming in above earnings per share. They're coming in above revenue numbers, majority of them are. I suppose we can take that as a bit of a win, even with the lowered estimates.
Morning, Sam. Yeah, I think it is a bit of a win because, you know, I think the big risk around COVID was really that we didn't know the extent of the impact. And markets are always going to be forward-looking. And what we've got at the moment is markets riding high. A lot of people very concerned about where equity valuations are. And it is comforting to know that at least the analysts that are often driving these prices were expecting things to be very bad, but the actual prints that have been coming out have been slightly better. So largely, we could say that the bad news is actually priced into the market.
Yeah, that is my sense. And lots of reasons why better. But the point is, as you say, nice to be surprised on the upside, particularly in a pandemic. I want to quickly touch on silver. I've been getting a lot of questions around silver. It's been running, although I note it's not yet exceeded the 2008 nor the 1980 highs. Of course, the 80 highs were the Hunt brothers cornering the market. Is silver something that you guys at Rand Swiss, I mean, do you follow it? Is it something you invest in? Or is it of sort of passing interest to you and your trading desk?
Yeah, having a look at silver. So, I mean, we've got silver contracts that obviously are quite popular with retail players as well. It's obviously a lot cheaper than gold, just in overall price. Yeah. So it seems to attract a certain kind of player. The returns have been pretty spectacular, but I think what's driving silver is very much the same story that's driving gold. It's just the ability to buy something physical, something that essentially can't be manipulated by central banks. With the obviously very loose monetary policy that we have internationally, that's helping to inflate asset prices, and silver is a direct beneficiary of this. I mean, comparing silver to gold, obviously there are actually more applications for silver in medicine and all over the place than they are for gold. But it does seem like stimulus is driving this higher, and I think people looking for alternative ways to kind of capture growth at the moment, because just because of the massive valuation that we're seeing in some of the equity markets, especially internationally. I mean, if you look at the S&P 500, for example, you know, you're sitting on a historic P of 24.9, which is getting pretty close to that all-time high level. I mean, you've got markets up over 4% in the S&P 500, so at least in the US. So it's I think it's really a move to try and just diversify away from kind of the traditional asset classes.
And then Cecil, results out due Monday next week, the 17th. Typically, Cecil, I've looked back all the way to 2015. They've usually given us a trading update sort of last week or, you know, last 3rd of July. Thus far, no trading update. I mean, it's been trading in a fairly tight range, what, 120 to about 130 rather, to 150 trading range. That update, if we get one, those results on Monday, it's going to be a biggie for where the Sasol share price is going to end up going.
No, I think that's right. And I mean, Sasol has also, it's been incredibly volatile. So if you have a look at it, I mean, we're still down around 50% year to date, even though we've seen a spectacular recovery in the share price. And I think what everyone's really going to be looking at, I mean, the results are one thing. I mean, we understand that there's going to be a massive impact from the, it's going to be a complicated set of results. Because one, you've got, you know, very, very volatile oil prices, which are a big input for Sasol. But also it's all going to come down to, you know, any progress that we see on the kind of the sale and unbundling of all their non-core assets as they try and right-size the collection. So certainly, I think you're exactly right. It's going to be a very, very interesting trading statement. And I think a lot of people are looking for any information on how Sasol is going to weather the storm.
And obviously, Lake Charles, I mean, they've said that they're looking to sell a stake. They've done some sales, but Lake Charles is that really biggie, and you know, not only a sale, but also probably a fairly significant write-down there as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Lake Charles obviously is the big one. And it's, you know, it probably is the most contingent on you know, a positive future for Sasol. But remember, they've also been selling assets locally as well. So they're looking at disposing of some of the oxygen units in Secunda. This is a company that's really, it's on the ropes, and we want to see it come out fighting.
Yeah, it's a good point. On the ropes, seeing if they can come back. Gary Boyson, Portfolio Manager at Rand Swiss, appreciate your early morning time.
MoneyWeb now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Varushka Singh. She's a fixed income and currency strategist at RMB. Varushka, appreciate your time this morning. We've seen the currencies been fairly volatile in the last, July was a fairly crazy month. Truthfully, Rand is a fairly volatile currency. It does do that. We had a, July, was it, you know, an especially bad month, or was it just more sort of our biases coming to the fore and it just felt like a really weak month for the ZAR?
Good morning, Simon. So I feel that it's been quite a roller coaster of a year. It feels like a different view of the rand each month. as those who track or keep track of the currency market know, August is historically a poor month for the rand, and the currency kicked off this trend at the start of the month by breaching the 17 level after trading below this level for most of July. So what helped keep the rand and its EM comparables, such as your Brazilian real and Mexican peso, at relatively stronger levels during last month was actually dollar weakness. So just to put that into perspective, over the month of July, the euro dollar moved from 1.12 to 1.19. So in other words, the dollar depreciated against the euro by 6% over last month. And over that same period, the rand strengthened against the dollar by 1.6% and Brazilian real by 4.7%, and the Mexican peso appreciated by 3.2% against the greenback. So we saw quite a bit of strength over last month compared to this month.
We sort of take it personally as a country when our rand is moving against us. When it's moving in, you know, moving stronger, we sort of celebrate that. In truth, to your point, the rand actually is yes, there's a little bit of South Africa in that, but it's much more the sort of broader what's happening, you know, to, as you say, to the dollar, what's happening to other emerging market currencies, the lira, the real, etc., etc.
Yes, that's it, Simon. I agree. It's never a case of looking at the rand domestically. It also has a lot of global factors. I mean, as we got into this new month, China and U.S. tensions are on the rise again. There's possibly further lockdowns on the increase of globally due to the second wave of COVID-19 taking hold. These factors have weighed on EM currencies, including the rand. We've seen a bit of dollar strength against the euro at the start of this month, and already the rand has broken through a key resistance level of 1750, opening this morning's Asian session at approximately 17.63. So to your point, it is exactly that. What is going on globally? If I have to put that into perspective, another EM currency's performance we should mention is the Turkish lira, yeah, which just last week depreciated by 6.4% against the dollar. And Turkey has now moved to what they call slow lending to businesses in an attempt to stabilize the lira by unwinding policies designed to shield the economy from, again, the coronavirus pandemic. Brazil, as well, has topped 3 million coronavirus infections, which is now affecting areas that were previously spared by the virus, which include your soybean fields. So the real was the worst EM currency performer after the lira. These types of impacts domestically, but more so global macroeconomic factors, will keep risky assets, which are your EM currencies, including the rand, quite vulnerable to further losses.
And your sense, I mean, where's the market position themselves as we sort of head, you know, down, I would say, to the end of the year? I mean, that truthfully is still some 3 or so months away, but summer's on its way, spring's on its way. Is the expectation for probably more weakness, or are we seeing the dollar sort of perhaps strengthen a bit and perhaps help us in that regard?
So it's quite interesting. We tend to look at, and I'm not going to speak too much about it because I wouldn't want to scare your listeners, but we tend to look at instruments like your risk reversals, which speak to positioning of the rand. So we've seen that sort of instrument be quite stable for quite a while over the past few months. Now we see it picking up a bit, which means there is an increase in the positioning for a bit of rand weakness. What's been interesting, though, is that our volatility, the rand volatility, which is measured with at-the-market options, has been quite stable. Mm-hmm. So in terms of the positioning, it's possibly a wait and see. We also have events such as the U.S. election and then MTBPS in October. So as much as we are nearing the end of a very interesting year, we still have a couple of risk events that we need to be aware of.
Yeah, that's a great point. And reminding us that actually, as I said, we take the currency so personally as a country, but truthfully, there is so much else out there that's actually driving it that kind of, in a sense, is completely and absolutely beyond our control. The US election being one of those. Vrishka Singh, fixed income and currency strategist, RMB, thank you very much for your time this morning. When you protect your monthly income against the risk of injury, illness and death, you protect your future and the impact you make on those around you. FMI has been protecting South Africans' income for over 25 years, constantly innovating to provide greater claim certainty and cover for more occupations than ever before. Make your impact, protect your income first. FMI, life done better. FMI, a division of Bidvest Life, is a licensed life insurer and authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting now with Victoria Rivas. She's a managing director, Morningstar Investment Management, South Africa. Victoria, appreciate your time. A report, an email that came out last week, two staggering stats in it. In the UK, there are more funds run by men named Dave or David than there are female fund managers in total. And I got to be honest, that just wobbled my head. The other one is that the global fund management industry, end of 2000, rather, 14% of fund managers were women. At the end of 2019, 14% of fund managers were women. Victoria, truthfully, in 20 years, we have made little progress in terms of diversity, particularly gender diversity, and it's a staggering indictment on the industry.
Good morning, Simon. It's perplexing indeed, and that statistic about the names of David is it's funny, but not so funny.
Yeah.
I think to become a fund manager is a career that's built over time. It requires a lot of experience. And so if you're a good portfolio manager, you tend to stay in your role. So there are not many new openings that actually come up in the industry. And sometimes the growth between industries is not necessarily equated to growth in roles, but it's actually perplexing and disappointing that over 20 years, the number is still at 14%. It's stayed constant over two decades.
Yeah, in South Africa, the number of female fund managers, 11%. I mean, diversity, it's not about quotas and box ticking. It's about diversity of thought. It's diversity of experience, ideas. It actually is an enhancement. It has a long-term benefit to funds. And you know, we're talking fund managers here, but truthfully, to C-suite as well.
Yes, so I think women bring a lot of different aspects to business, but as you said, diversity is the key here. So I'm not a huge fan of quotas in any way because I believe people should be appointed on merit.
Mm-hmm.
And at Morningstar, when we receive CVs, you know, we always ask for, we want name, age, race, and to be removed from the CV so that you can actually appoint people based on merit. And what you find is when you build a team of diverse thinkers and diverse thought, diverse energy, that is what drives brilliant businesses. So when you look at C-suite, you see the results that introduction of women to boards actually increases financial performance. I would say the opposite could also be true. If you had 100% female board, the introduction of men would be positive. It's just about bringing diverse thought and diversity to businesses in whatever shape or form that finds itself.
Yeah, that's a great point. We're not looking to skew the other way. We're looking for that balance. We're talking gender. This obviously also applies to race. It applies to age. If you had a board who were all 75 years old or a fund management team, yeah, that would equally be a bad thing. You just want those different lived experiences, those different sort of home lives that being brought to the fund management team, to the C-suite team, and that diversity just making things so much more robust for the institution.
Absolutely. And if we can take a positive out of COVID and lockdown, from our team, we have 63% of our team are female, but productivity has absolutely skyrocketed. And what we found is when you change the old style way of working, which is office bound, more rigid, or not, although Morningstar's not a rigid company in any shape or form, but mm-hmm. just the concept of corporate and office hours. If you break that mold and you say, you need to be output-based, work from home, get your job done, and fit in your life where you need to, what you see is just an incredible result from a productivity perspective. And so I do think that a lot of women are going to be shining during this time because the ability to multitask, to balance lives, to be mothers, to be wives, to be women, as well as fund managers, I think is going to shine through during this time now.
I like that. Output is definitely, I think, what we need to measure on. I suppose the question you mentioned up front, you know, the investment fund industry in particular, if you're a quality fund manager, you know, staying in your job for 20 years is absolutely sort of par for the course. I suppose we start this, you know, right at the beginning, you were talking around recruitment at Morningstar. It needs to be companies looking at recruitment processes. Truthfully, it might even to a degree go all the way back to universities and who's taking those subjects around CAs and CFA.
And Simon, I'd rewind that even to schools. You know, the goal at school, it's not a career of choice. It's not something that comes onto your radar. At university, even if we look at the degrees that feed you into a fund management industry, they do tend to be more male-dominated, just I guess maybe from a schooling perspective. But I think what I would say to aspiring young women on, you know, who are listening to this is that there are so many different roles within the fund management industry. It's a fantastic industry for women. It's a fantastic industry for men, and just the diversity that does exist in the industry. But we need to increase that diversity. But just know that there are many options for you. And I would agree with you that it needs to come from university, but even back to schools.
Yeah, and I like that point. There's like, you know, we've been talking fund managers, sort of the point person, but actually there's a lot more in this industry. And it is a hugely fun industry and absolutely worth the time. Victoria Rivers, Managing Director, Morningstar Investment Management, South Africa. Thank you very much for your time this morning. That's it for the show today. You'll find us live every weekday morning at 6:30 a.m. We're on the MoneyWeb website or the MoneyWeb app. And, of course, the podcast is available every morning from 7 a.m. On the website, on the app, and wherever you might get your quality podcasts. Chat to us on the social media, Facebook, Twitters. Heck, we're even on LinkedIn, hashtag MoneyWeb. Now, this show was proudly sponsored by FMI, a division of Bidvest Life Limited. Make your impact. Protect your income first. The views and opinions expressed in this show do not reflect the views and opinions of FMI. Massive thanks to my team, Eddie and Cordora, to you for listening, my guests for the early morning time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.